You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 28th of May 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live today at RadioAlbion.com, because we have with us the producer of RussJournal.org, Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. Matt, good afternoon to you, sir. We had a few technical difficulties there at the beginning. How are you doing anyway?
Yeah, Skype doesn't like us sometimes. Greetings from the land if I haven't gotten my damn stimulus check yet.
Still?
Very unpleasant place to be.
That is a shame. So do you want to just let people know where they can send you some donations first, Matt?
Well, other than the IRS, our friends, of course, can go to RussJournal.org. There's the donation button there. It's not for decoration. And, of course, the page that you helped me with. The name isn't coming to me at the moment, but you search for the name of the show and everything will come right up.
That's theorthodoxnationalist.wordpress.com. There's a PayPal button on there as well, because that's the only income you have, and you do spend all your time researching for this show and for the essays that you write and the books that you write. So, you know, when you're doing that, you do need to rely on listeners and readers to donate money to just pay for the living costs. And today, anyway, we're going to be talking about, is there a war brewing between India and China, which listeners may not be aware of, but over the weekend, international reports said that multiple hundreds or up to 1,000 Chinese troops have crossed into India following prior small-scale skirmishes weeks ago involving dozens of Indian and Chinese soldiers near a remote but strategically important mountain pass near Tibet. Indian media is now reporting that up to 5,000 to 10,000 PLA troops have now moved into Ladakh's disputed Galwan River area. Some Indian media reports have suggested multiple thousands, while a new Business Standard India report now claims up to 10,000 Chinese soldiers are inside India occupying the Galwan Valley whilst digging into fortified positions. Though such figures remain unconfirmed and very likely inflated, it is clear that Indian authorities are watching with growing alarm what they view as an invasion of their sovereign territory. Matt, this sounds quite serious. They're digging themselves into fortified positions on Indian soil. What do you make of this?
Well, there is no agreed upon border there. They fight a war there. The big one was, of course, in the 60s, where China, you know, wiped the floor with the Indians. The Indians now have special training because this is about 15,000 feet in the air. This is in the Himalayan mountains. It is a strategic position. It's a border area. The Chinese are claiming that there's never been – they're constantly shooting at each other here. There's no agreed-upon border area, and it's a consensus line more or less, which is very, very vague. The Chinese say that there's no obvious border here, especially given where it is. So but the Indians – we're sending men up there first. This whole thing is based on a series of roads way up there that the Indians have created for the sake of moving military equipment all over the place. That's the initial impetus for the Chinese buildup. The Chinese didn't just decide one day to go up 15,000 feet and set up fortified positions. The Indians were essentially colonizing the area, which is, of course, very difficult to do.
So it's a disputed area, really, and the Indians have been up there more than the Chinese. So the Chinese are now just sort of paying them back, basically. But besides that, there's also American involvement, of course. In a conversation with Richard Verma, who served as the US ambassador to India for the 2014 to 2017 term, Alice Wells pointed out the similarities between growing skirmishes in the Himalayas and Chinese actions in the South China Sea, and suggested they were part of an ongoing effort to change the rules and the status quo. Wells said that China's growing military presence on the border with India, where clashes were not uncommon, had become a cause of concern for New Delhi. According to her, the problem is becoming more serious as China strives to shirk responsibility and spread false information. The US has always advocated tensions between India and China. This is one of the tools of their Indo-Pacific strategy, aimed at increasing influence in South Asia. Wells said China's behavior explains why like-minded nations are now rallying with each other under a handful of diplomatic groupings such as the Trilateral, the US, Japan and India, and the Quadrilateral or Quad, US, Japan, India and Australia. Her statement is clearly in line with the current strategy of US President Donald Trump's administration to continue discrediting China's reputation in the context of blaming it for the coronavirus pandemic. The US is conducting an anti-China campaign and is trying to draw all their global allies into these efforts. What is the similarities between what's going on here and what's going on in the South China Seas, Matt?
It wouldn't surprise me when this is all over that the U.S. has been funding the Indian road building and colonization of the Himalayas. It's identical in the sense that the attempt is to goad China into action, knowing full well that India can't handle China militarily. They've been beaten several times in the past. India wouldn't be being this provocative unless the U.S. was backing them, sort of like Austria in World War One with Germany. It really bothers me. Given the coronavirus depression and collapse of the economy, the U.S. is dying for a war to get out of this. And if they're going to start it in India and have I will bet my house almost that New Delhi has guarantees from Washington.
Well, despite United States support for New Delhi in the border dispute with China, Washington has not been able to incite India to take unilateral actions. In the context of coronavirus issues, even the Indian military recognized that it is now necessary to focus on health issues and the economy, and not border skirmishes. They are willing to accept the fact that Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi is redistributing forces and assets in favour of the civil sector. Well, the problem is, Matt, I mean, it does look like China has taken advantage of the fact that India is having this problem with coronavirus and the army is engaged in working with the people that are having problems with coronavirus, and China is just steaming in there, trying to take land. That's the way that it looks to the general public.
Well, then that's a problem. They simply say that Chinese media, no matter who owns it, is state controlled, so they don't have to cite it. So everything comes out of India. I mean, everything that's been cited in most of the sources so far comes straight out of India. But India would benefit from a war. Ultimately, they'd lose it, but they can completely change the economy and even distract attention from the collapse. With a limited war on the border. Those wars have never been very large, a few divisions on each side. So, you know, it's not like they're going to occupy the country or anything, but that might be just what governments need. So, yeah, it looks this way. But remember, India has specially trained mountain troops, as does China in the area. That place is relatively – it's not like South Korea, but it's heavily militarized and has been for some time. So these troops are stationed up there permanently. And but you know, in terms of road building stuff, yeah, that hasn't made it into the mainstream press. This is a bit out of the area of your typical American analyst, anyway. But that's really what's happening. You know, yeah, China isn't dealing with the coronavirus anymore. India is to a limited extent, but that doesn't mean that the Indian Army doesn't have its specialized forces up there. That's not going away.
Well, we heard about the Indo-Pacific strategy there, and the Indo-Pacific strategy is one of the most important foreign policy means of the Trump administration to pressurize China. In June 2017, there was a minor conflict between China and India on the Doklam Plateau, and in November of the same year, the US proposed the concept of the Indo-Pacific strategy at the APEC conference in Vietnam. The gap between these two events is only a few months. It is no coincidence that many analysts believe that the Sino-Indian confrontation has influenced Trump to shape this strategy. China for now has maintained its restraint, seeking to gain mutual understanding with India, so Washington was still unable to achieve its strategic goals. The Trump administration relies heavily on provoking disputes to worsen conflicts between different countries and China. In this way, Washington makes these countries strategically dependent on the US. However, the problem is that the US strategy often clashes with India's national interests and cultural traditions, but New Delhi does not want the US to use India as a tool. Now, the way I read it, Matt, I thought India wanted to be, you know, the big player in the region, and they were sort of fighting it out with China anyway as to who's going to be the big player, basically, in that part of Asia. But if India goes working with America, that's not really going to serve its interests, though, surely, is it? Because it's not going to end up being the big player in the region. What do you make of this?
It's a strange contradiction. You know, India and China have hundreds of billions of dollars of trade every year. They can't interrupt that. If anything, India needs China a heck of a lot more than the U.S. India's military equipment largely comes from Russia. Now, India made a big deal with American corporations a few years ago, but you know they have both – they're playing both off against another. Russia may end up coming and being the mediator here. Trump is posing as a mediator as if he's neutral. That's like mediating between Israel and Palestine. But they certainly aren't. India has been enriched by Chinese trade. This is part of the reason why India is not taking the bait here, and the U.S. may hold, you know, certain kinds of trade deals and stuff over its head, saying you better listen and do this. But it's not in India's interest. I don't think any war there would be popular. And because this is a disputed area, it's not like Chinese troops are moving into Mumbai or something like that. So it's not galvanizing the population. This is Johnson's laws at work here. No one really knows anything around here, so the media could say whatever they want, and the Trump administration can too.
Well, President Modi, or Prime Minister Modi, has been following Trump's example in nationalism as well, apparently. The backdrop against which these clashes are transpiring is India's aggressive attempt to poach foreign companies from the People's Republic. India has even set aside land twice the size of Luxembourg for such companies to exploit in the event that they decide to re-offshore from the East Asian state to the South Asian one. This perfectly dovetails with Trump's trade war plans to encourage foreign companies to leave his country's rival and either return home or set up shop in a friendly pro-American country instead. Of note, India is also vehemently opposed to China's Belt and Road Initiative as its flagship project of the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor traverses through territory that New Delhi claims as belonging to India, per its maximalist approach to the Kashmir conflict. Obviously, the US could not have found a better ally than India to thwart China's economic plans. Can you just clear something up here for me, Matt? When they're trying to poach these companies from China to India, is that Indian companies that have moved to China? Because if this is paralleling what's happening in America, Trump is trying to get American companies to come back from China. So is this Indian companies that have moved to China that Modi is trying to get back, or just trying to get people to foreign companies just to stop investing in China?
No, it's the latter. These are Chinese companies investing in India, joint ventures and everything else. Essentially, these are hostile takeovers. This is the this is really the economic foundation here. And now we can mention the Silk Road, which, you know, India is opposed to only because it enriches Pakistan and China, Pakistan and China being allies. It does enrich Russia, too. And India has always been very friendly with Russia because so, again, they're going to end up being the diplomats here. But this is something where India is falling for American pressure because the U.S. wants this Belt Initiative destroyed and these regions, you know, thrown back into the third world again. But India, if they had any rationality here and put aside their hostility to Pakistan, they could really benefit from this. Pakistan and India are both members of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization together. So again, that's another the U.S. is livid with that. They have not left that organization yet. So India is still a member of this multilateral group, which, you know, I've been singing their praises for a long time. So no, these are Chinese companies, hostile takeovers, financing coming from the United States. So this is another area of provocation from the Indian side.
Right. Well, that clears that up. I can't really see India working with Pakistan. I mean, you've got a long history there of problems between the two of them, between Hindus and Muslims. Even if it was to the obvious benefit to both of them to work together, I can't really see them doing that. Well, apparently this is being called the hybrid war. Taken together, India is indisputably intensifying its American-backed hybrid war against China as a sign of fealty to its new ally, especially considering that it's only officially been the US's comprehensive global strategic partner since Trump's landmark visit to the country a few months back in February, and thus feels like it has something to prove. Both countries share the grand strategic goal of containing China, to which end they are working hand in glove with one another to carry out this concerted campaign against the People's Republic. Building off the idiom, the American hand is unquestionably controlling the Indian glove. After Trump cracked the whip on Modi by forcing him to export hydroxychloroquine to the US last month, which asserted his country's dominance as India's neo-imperial master. Whether across the military, economic, or soft power domains, the US-Indian alliance is doing its utmost to create serious difficulties for China. With India now suspecting China of building an island off its coast, ties will likely continue to worsen to the United States' benefit. Do you know anything about this island that they're supposedly building? Is it off India's coast or China's?
Well, yeah, China's been building islands in – I don't know exactly how you build an island, but – they're doing it in the South China Sea, and these are militarized areas. It's only a suspicion, as it says here. But you know, if this is really the neo-imperialism that this writer suggests, how popular is that going to be in India? What difference does it make whether it's Great Britain or the U.S., especially if it's not in India's interest? If China was smart here, what they would do is offer a very good trade deal and certain concessions. To bring India away from the U.S. This is a brand new relationship. India has always been very close to Russia, as I said. This is just since February. So, you know, the Indian population is working. They're pushing us towards a war with a country that one of our biggest trading partners, you know. So this is going to be a big problem. I can't imagine this being very popular in India. You know, it was the BJP. It was the Hindu nationalists that first opened up talks with Pakistan. You know, I think you're right. It's a long shot to talk about any real cooperation, but it was the Hindu nationalists that first went there, because there was no point in this continued violence. And they do trade with one another, not as much as China, though. So this is not in India's interest. This is enforcing them to export things and doing that. This is not something that a formerly colonized country wants to see happen. China could really take advantage of this.
Well, you would think that they would be doing trade with China. It's right next door. They both make cheap goods. They've probably got similar amount of wages that they pay. They're probably fairly even with one another. You know, they could probably really, really quite benefit from it. India trading with China, India trading with America. I mean, that is a very uneven relationship that they're starting out from. Well, India has actually banned companies from investing in China. India's Department for Promotion of Industry and Internal Trade, the DPIIT, took a page from Trump's playbook by selectively embracing economic nationalism after it revised its foreign investment policy to mandate that companies from neighboring states receive government approval prior to investing within the country. Although not officially stated in the DPIIT's notification on the matter, this new policy is being widely interpreted by Indian media as aimed against China, which the local Chinese embassy also fears is the case. They released a statement on Monday reminding their hosts that Chinese investment has driven development in the mobile phone, household electrical appliances, infrastructure, and automobile industries, which has been mutually beneficial. The Chinese embassy then warned that the additional barriers set by the Indian side for investors from specific countries violates the WTO's principle of non-discrimination and do not conform to the consensus of G20 leaders and trade ministers to realize a free, fair, non-discriminatory, transparent, predictable, and stable trade and investment environment. And I'm just going to stop there, Matt, because that does seem to be a little bit like the pot calling the kettle black. I mean, hasn't China, isn't China gaming the WTO? Aren't they investing in their private businesses? I mean, this is what the problem is that America has with China, is because it has a national socialist state effectively. So it helps all the businesses out. So, I mean, isn't that a bit rich of them to be complaining about India not following the rules here, do you think?
No, I think it is, because exactly what they describe here, this is a very left-wing newspaper, but I think they're right here. China, you have to do the same with Indian companies in China. You have to get government permission, and it can't be a 100% investment. You have to at least go half with the Chinese. On the other hand, they also mentioned that so much of Indian industry has, especially the high-tech sector, has come from Chinese investment, mutually beneficial Chinese investment. So they're cutting off their nose here. And this is why I keep saying that this policy, the Trump administration, is going to end up being very unpopular. I think China can live with this, because if it is mutually beneficial, well, you're not going to tell Indian billionaires where they can make their money and vice versa. So, you know, if China can do it, then India can do it. And it's just a matter of negotiations. They could work this out. But the U.S. is pushing them to do this, and it's just continuing to provoke the Chinese. But you're right. You know, that's exactly China's policy if you want to invest there. So India's really not doing anything different here, but they are doing it in an aggressive way only because of U.S. pressure.
There's a lot of technology that's coming out of India now, and also chemistry, biology, medicines, all sorts of things that you wouldn't have expected them to be making like 50 years ago. And probably a lot of it has come about through working with China. Well, in other words, India's discriminatory investment regulations appear to be part of its comprehensive global strategic partnership with America, intended to benefit American investors at the expense of their Chinese counterparts, thus making this a zero-sum policy. It also has geostrategic implications, considering the global context in which these hostile intentions are being expressed. It can only be hoped that India reconsiders the risks associated with this policy. Otherwise, it might be destined to become America's junior partner. Are there any other risks besides, you know, them just losing out economically here, do you think, Matt?
Well, what we've been talking about, the buildup of this battle in the Himalayas. The only good news there is that the biggest war they had, you know, 50 years ago wasn't all that huge. And India's going to be very, very careful, because China will beat them, but like they did years ago. So, you know, other than the military issue, the economic issue, but more importantly than all that, junior partner, a huge country like India that's splitting the difference between third and first world, this is not what they want to be. We've already mentioned that it's a really contradictory idea. Can the U.S. assist them in keeping China at bay while becoming then this third world little brother to the U.S.? It's a contradiction. This is not going to be popular, especially with the ruling party, the BJP.
Well, the problem is, as I say, they want to be the big player there, don't they? And, you know, they might be thinking, well, if we just do what America says, we can squash China and we'll be the big players here. But the far more chances are that they will just end up being the junior partner, as you say, Matt. Well, let's go back in time to July 2019 to have a look at America trying to stop a recent trade agreement between India, China and Russia. For example, the promise of large-scale Indian investments in Russia's Far East, which is expected to figure prominently on the agenda during Modi's trip to Vladivostok in September to attend the Eastern Economic Forum, and visible progress on the stalled Bangladesh-China-India-Myanmar economic corridor could placate each respective great power for the time being and be paired with joint economic initiatives in Africa in order to sweeten the deal. That might be enough to prevent Lavrov from once again publicly criticizing the Indo-Pacific as an artificially imposed pro-American concept, which could allay the alt-media community's fears for a while about India's newfound reorientation towards the West, especially if they saw Russia openly participating in this venture and receiving veritable benefits from it. Furthermore, China would be pleased to pioneer its long-sought connectivity corridor with India via the BCIM, which could tie the two great powers closer together. So you think it's things like this that America is trying to upset? And what actually happened with this plan that's laid out here, Matt?
Well, I included this to show that this isn't something that just happened. This has been going on for a long time. The U.S. recognizes that India is really a part of this corridor, so to speak. has benefited from it. India looks the other way when China assists Pakistan because there's been peace there for some time. I think by alt media, I think they mean us, because very few other people are talking about this. Maybe Global Research, a handful of others, and talking about, you know, what we mean here is that whatever the U.S. expands, liberalism expands, leftism expands. All of these policies that we fight expand. The U.S. is the head of the Hydra here. So we're always at war with those interests because we know what that means. The National Socialism in China and certainly in Burma, as we've talked about it many times in this show, is being challenged by liberalism. It's right in the American Defense Department's statement of last year that this is what we're at war with. That's why China is a problem. So this is purely ideological. So that's really the foundation here. But trying to break up these trade agreements, hurting a lot of very powerful people over there, this is what's the foundation of all this other stuff. And it is very unwelcome at the time. These trade deals continue. Trade is very brisk over there. The U.S. failed in this regard. But it's just very ham-handed and very very aggressive. And that's what's happening here in the broader brush here.
Well, it does look like Trump didn't actually succeed in what he was hoping to do. Or maybe he did succeed, but India didn't actually get what they wanted. After his visit back in February, there was lots and lots of promotion about this when he went over there. Trump spoke in front of a huge, great arena. There was a big fanfare and lots of noise made about the fact that he was going to be doing this big deal with India. And it doesn't look like any deals actually came out of it. China's growing influence is prompting the US to more actively build its own Indo-Pacific strategy. Essentially, Washington is seeking partners to more actively restrict China as it rises in economic and military stature. But in the eyes of Trump, India is just a useful tool to implement this strategy and pressure China and its Belt and Road Initiative. India's participation in the Indo-Pacific strategy was initially essential to oppose the Belt and Road Initiative. However, New Delhi hopes the Indo-Pacific strategy is an alternative to the Chinese Belt and Road Initiative and an opportunity for its own economic development, independent of China, and in the hopes of fulfilling its potential of becoming a great power on its own terms. Initially, India was enthusiastic for the American strategy, but this enthusiasm has now waned. India found that although it has common interests with the United States in balancing China, there were too many differences, especially revolving around trade. India's current concern is not to curb China and other issues, but how to improve its domestic economy. Washington wants India to be a bridgehead in the region. However, India is currently governed by Hindutva nationalists, and they are very cautious with foreign ideologies, particularly those with an Anglo basis. In addition, the Indo-Pacific strategy does not have a known economic policy and structure, as rather it is just aimed at pressurizing China, a stark difference to the Belt and Road Initiative. The constant threat of closing their markets and forcing India to buy something is not the best strategy to achieve results. In the political field, this is not the basis for long-term cooperation, especially if Trump wants India to be a bulwark against China. Trump did not sign any large-scale trade agreements during his visit, while India needs a mutually beneficial trading partner like China. The problem remains unresolved, and there are too many trade gaps, making it difficult to make up for, even with the expected use of military transactions. Although Trump did not explicitly mention China during his trip to India, he did indirectly mention China. So that was written just after his trip there back in February, and it seems that India really felt like they should have got a lot more out of this, Matt. What were they hoping for? A lot of trade deals with Trump? What do you make of it?
Well, the U.S. acted very arrogantly, treating India like a little third world country, and in fact, it's coming out of that, at least in certain places. And this has really been the thesis that we've been arguing this whole time. Is that you can't have a BJP government being dictated to. When they say Anglo basis, really all they mean is liberalism. India is not a liberal country unless it's under pressure. Certainly China is not. And it says right here, they're not going to mess around with a very beneficial trade with, they trade with Iran too, don't forget. Heavy trade with Russia, heavy trade with China, and the U.S. trying to use them and imposing a liberal order. What they really mean is making it easier for the U.S. to come in and buy up Indian assets because the U.S. economy has been in depression for years. the Indians are not an ignorant people. They're well aware of this. They're not going to be spoken to like American Indians. This isn't going to happen. And the BJP has been pretty vehement about this. So this action, the Trump administration, the State Department, the Trade Commission, all this stuff, it's going to fail because India realizes that the U.S. is in serious trouble. It has a massive trade deficit. The dollar is collapsing for a long time. And therefore, their interests are with Russia, Iran, China, Burma, Kazakhstan, all of Central Asia. And they can be a regional hegemon. That doesn't mean that China has to suffer at all. They have two very different areas of focus. So the U.S. is going to fail here. And like this article from February, it failed already. That means that the U.S. may be financing the opposition, the Congress Party, against the BJP in the future. But that remains to be seen.
Well, it does look like they just don't want to play the game, do they? They don't want to fight back against China, which is what America wants. They would rather look after their people at the moment with the problems that they have with coronavirus. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.